From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
If you were spending 70% plus of your time doing tasks that you generally sort of enjoy, people are likely to be very happy in their jobs, and they say if that's less than 50% of the time, they probably won't be happy, and the chance that they leave or whatever else.
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Paul McClatchy, founder of Engage People, which in Paul's own words is a specialist recruitment firm aligning businesses in Ireland with financial talent. Paul was a director in CPL recruitment up until 2016 when he left to set up his own firm. In the short period since starting Engage People, Paul has built the business to a team of 8 and over 1 million in annual revenue. In this conversation, Paul talks about why he left a leadership role in a well-established company to start his own business, the books he's read that have shortened his path to success, and Engage People's ambition for international expansion. I started out by asking Paul what Engage People does and who they serve.
So Conor, thanks very much, first of all, for having me on. You've had a fabulous selection of guests so far, so delighted to join.
You're welcome.
So Engage People is a financial recruitment business. So we've three core markets, being accounting, banking, insurance. Each of those areas have, you know, as you know yourself, on the finance side, has their own sort of complexity with industry and practice, but they would be the three broader areas. So our purpose is to align business with talent to create happier, more productive workplaces. So that's sort of our purpose and mission.
Talk to me about that. Is having a mission or having a purpose and having that specifically outlined, do you think that's important?
So a good question, right? So when I first set up the business, so we're 5 years actually in May of this year now, and time certainly flies. I struggled a little bit. I mean, I knew what I wanted to do, and that was obviously to run a successful recruitment business. And probably took me a few years of chatting to other successful entrepreneurs to really get sort of underneath what the mission was. And I think we sort of built that up over time. And I think if I was to say, you know, what's gone really well for us, maybe over the last 2 years in particular, we've got a very clear sort of value proposition for our clients. And we feel, you know, I guess if we were to summarize into one area, it's really that alignment, you know, and that's where the sort of the magic happens. You know, when people are, you know, an individual or a candidate is crystal clear about what the expectations of the business are, and then the business ideally gets someone in who's bringing value, you know, potentially over and above what they were expecting, you know, in terms of the deliverables of the role.
That must be something that I've maybe seen from dealing with recruiters on both sides of the equation, you know, being a candidate on one side and then being a recruiter, I suppose, on the other side. Is it hard to balance what everyone wants and the expectations of both sides?
I think having sort of general business experience is certainly useful. I think building up the relationship, say, on the client side, first of all, so with the company you're working with, very often what will happen from the outset is you get a job spec, and that's great. And that's, you know, it's a useful sort of kickoff point, and it gives it a broad outline of the role. We try and get a better understanding, first of all, about what the, you know, a bit about the business, what their situation is. We have a sort of a process we run through. It's reasonably brief. I mean, is it not dissimilar to the discussion you and I would have had a couple of times before Christmas? And that's to try and get an understanding where the business is at, and, you know, where they're hoping to get to, just in sort of simple terms. We then try and drill it down as to maybe what the expectations are. So in the first, if someone was to come in and, you know, do a sort of a, you know, a solid job, you know, a 6 out of 10 in the first 6 months, that what that would look like. And if someone was to come in and really, you know, rock your world and make life much easier for you, what does that look like? And then we have a better understanding, really, you know, when it comes to them sitting opposite someone, really what they're looking for. I think on the individual side, to understand, so, you know, everyone is different. And I mean that like really sort of genuinely. Like, so we could look at a CV, and it could be, say, in the accounting world, it could be a chartered accountant who has 2 or 3 years post-qualified experience in the tech or pharma sector, and I could jump to an assumption, because we, you know, there's quite a few jobs in that space, that brilliant, they're looking for a bump in salary, they're looking for, you know, career progression. But really, and our initial sort of, you know, tagline with Engage People is asking the right questions. But before we discuss any job spec, we try and get a better understanding of what people are looking for, what the big motivator for them is. The common theme with high performers is it's really just taking on more and more responsibility, you know, and it's consecutive. And it's not that every 3 months they're taking on a new challenge, but over the course of one's career, you know, every 3-6 months, that they feel that they're making progress. And that's really where the alignment comes in. So that's a very long answer to your question. But I think like it's really asking those questions from the aid set to get a good understanding. And it tends to work very well if we play our role appropriately in the process and that we coach our clients and candidates along the way.
How did you start the business?
I guess there would be an entrepreneurial bent in my family. So my mother, I'm the youngest of five. My mother would be quick to tell me that the day I went to primary school, she set up a bakery. She ran a successful business. My elder sister runs her own business in the TV and ad production space. So I guess, but probably not dissimilar to yourself, Connor. When I was setting out goals every year, so before I set up, I was a director in CPL, very successful Irish recruitment company. It was there for 10 years, really enjoyed my time. But I found when I was setting my own goals, basically, I really wanted to achieve the next step. And I'm really in our sector that, you know, for me, it came down to running my own business. Now, my previously, actually, before I joined CPL, I worked for a company in Australia that was very much aligned to me and you know, how that business was run. And maybe if the circumstances were there, if I had met other maybe like-minded people, I may have gone into business with someone else or another group of people. But when it came down to it, that was really my sort of thought process. And then it was just a case, and I'm very lucky. I have a supportive wife who asked me most days when I planned on doing it. I also found, and a lot of my clients, they would have asked me why I didn't do it. And I think if you're sort of arguing against, you know, when someone clearly has your sort of interest in heart and they're sort of backing you to do it, I felt I sort of owed it to myself to give it a go.
So when you first decided then to take the plunge, what were the first and kind of initial steps that you took? Was it to quit the job straight away or did you do any kind of research or anything beforehand?
I did some research. I remember speaking to someone. So I had a good finish with, and it's not always the case in our sector, but I was very, very honest with the people I was working at CPL at the time as to what I was doing. I was expecting that there would be a period, you know, of, you know, I guess what you call sort of gardening leave. Mm-hmm. And I didn't particularly, you know, immediately want to call every client I was working with because I just felt that, you know, I was part of the sort of leadership team within CPL and I mm-hmm. felt, you know, there was sort of a good level of respect there. A good contact of mine said, well, why don't you write down the names of 100 people, whether they be friends, family. And if you start at the top of that list and work your way down, basically, and if you get to the end of the 100, drop 100 new names after that and see who you go. I wasn't long getting into that list before I felt that there was quite a bit of support there and I got a lot of help. And I posted on LinkedIn, you know, that I was leaving CPL and said I'd engaged people. And immediately in my LinkedIn inbox, now there were different jobs of all shapes and sizes. There was sales director roles, HR director roles. And look, I have to say it was a tricky decision because I thought, right, we'll take what I'm given here. But then I thought, look, if I'm putting it out there to the universe, you know, that I'm recruiting this, that, and the other, it may not be that credible. So then, you know, this is 2016, Brexit came about, you know, Trump was getting in. There was plenty going on. And obviously, you should ask yourself these questions. She said, I wonder if the timing right. Mm-hmm. But I spoke to a journalist. So I said, look, if I speak to 50 CFOs and I report back about their business, you know, is that something you'd publish? And they said, listen, if you speak to five CFOs, you know, and you come back to us on that, then we'll publish it. So that was a very good reason for me to pick up the phone. I got stuck into that then, basically. So that really led then to quite a bit of business after that, which was great.
So was that PR kind of the main driver of the business, especially in the early days?
So I was flying solo. So I went from having a team of sort of 25, 30 people to working for myself, which I have to say, and maybe it's not for everyone, but geez, I loved it. I just, you know, the independence, the freedom. And I think I needed that bit of time. And then I think like some leaders in recruitment are very good, brilliant at leadership, brilliant at the operational side. One of my core skills, I'm a good recruiter. So when it came to the sort of the finance director, CFO side of things, you know, I managed to get a good run. The recruitment sector is really sort of, it's really circular. So your clients become your candidates, become your clients. So if you were speaking to a CFO about a role, they will very often then use you for a piece of work. So that would have been probably 60, 70% of the strategy in the early days. And then I saw the power of social media. So I would have been reasonably proactive. You know, I would have been putting out there all the stuff that we were doing at that particular time. And then from the start of 2017, we started to hire new people in.
In recruitment especially, and this, it goes for accounting firms, I suppose, as well. But in recruitment, there is a big risk that some of your key staff members will leave, will take the relationships with them, and will set up on their own. And ultimately, you had a good relationship with CPL, and you weren't kind of poaching clients or anything like that. But I mean, it is a big risk within recruitment that happens, and happens to a lot of recruiters, I'd imagine.
You know, the people running the business, to create a culture where people want to stay, where they feel aligned to the business themselves. I think my sort of future goal with the business is to probably create those opportunities. You know, we're still a relatively small business, you know, with 7 or 8 people. We're growing, we're hiring at the moment, obviously, which is a good place to be. But utopia for me would be that you hire really ambitious people who are aligned to what we're hoping to achieve, and that they'll take on additional responsibility. So to achieve that, and there's no perfect way, we sit down every 3 months individually and really clear conversations, basically exactly as to how each of the team are against their objectives. I ask for feedback, and we share that feedback across the team as well. So I think we've created a culture which I think is quite open. And if there was something I think where I've probably developed myself and learned is, I used to take it like really personally, you know, 5-6 years ago when someone left, you know, I found it really hard. I think it was maybe a product of an environment of being in a big company whereby, you know, it wasn't, you want to attract, to retain and develop high performers. Whereas now, and look, thankfully, we've been in a really good place. We came into COVID with 5 people, and there were 5 really good people who was really keen to retain and hopefully bring on to the next stage, which we managed to achieve. And, you know, we've added 2 or 3 people since then. But I think that having those clear conversations, if someone's not on board, they want to do their own thing, then so be it. You know, and I would only have myself to blame if we were to lose someone who was really good. But I do take the view now of sort of onwards and upwards. And I think that's been part of my own development, really, you know, as a business owner and as a leader.
You mentioned earlier just about you were kind of getting all sorts of jobs into the inbox straight away. Has having that niche been an advantage to you in hiring for financial roles and accountants and things like that?
Yeah, so I mentioned I worked for a company called Parker Bridge in Sydney, and I went from an environment, and I just mentioned this briefly. So I joined, there's a British recruitment firm called Reed. They're huge, they turn over billions of pounds. You know, every high street in the UK, there's a McDonald's, a Boots and a Reed, or, you know, so the saying goes. And they would have been reasonably, you know, there would have been a Reed Employment, which was sort of business support, and then a Reed Accountancy. But it would have been a fairly broad range of roles that maybe each of the team would have had. I then joined Parker Bridge in Sydney. I sat down beside this guy, Simon Field, and it was just, this guy was top class, you know. So he was, I think he was, you know, doing close enough to $1 million a year on his desk. He recruited in a specific niche, and anything else that was left or right of that area was just a distraction to him. And because he was so razor focused in that area, that was a very good learning experience for me. So I think for us, right, so the markets that I mentioned, I think there are complementary areas or areas that are you would naturally look at. So I think over the course of 2021, the legal space would be an opportunity for us. And then I think the broader business support space would be a natural area. And the reason I say that is, so within, say, the accountancy space, a lot of companies who recruit in that area, they also recruit other areas of the office. And so that would be a natural enough space to move into. Mm-hmm. I would be of the view that the individual recruiters, myself included, would have a niche to focus on. And I just think that's a more of a value add piece. And it's a more efficient process. So you remember, Connie, when we spoke initially, you run a great business, which you're constantly growing yourself. Immediately, as soon as we got chatting, I introduced you to Sinead, who works with me. So she works day and night within the sort of the accounting space. And it would be a combination of industry. There would be some practice positions. If it was a temporary position, then you would have spoken to Roisin. And the reason being, we want to be able to turn those positions around as quickly as possible so we can move on to the next one. What the company's paying us for is individuals who are 8, 9, 10 out of 10 performers. And if we're starting from scratch every single time, the chances of us delivering that would probably be slimmer. So that would be the view. I think deciding on the area, I think there has to be demand. And I think that's a sort of a key piece. So I think that has to be your starting ground. Is there a business, basically, you know, what to say, is there a market in the gap or a gap in the market? But is there a business in the space? And once there's demand in the area, it's up to us to really set up that supply chain behind that. You know, I guess back ourselves to deliver when the opportunities arise.
As time has gone, you've gone from being, I suppose, just a recruiter and doing everything else when you can, to probably doing more kind of managing director type tasks. How has that changed over time?
So when I was setting up Engage People, I spoke to a variety of business owners in the recruitment sector and outside, and particularly in the recruitment space, the companies that were doing well, they weren't getting distracted by stuff that was, you know, and I'd never call it low value because it plays a crucial role, you know, invoicing clients, credit control, you know, putting together monthly, and that's a hugely valuable skill set. Did I want, and actually, when I first started up, I was going in on Saturdays and filling out, you know, it was a 13.5% VAT to my own expenses. So I just thought to myself, my highest value skill is developing business, recruiting for CFOs, finance directors, hiring really good people. So I try and spend most of my time doing that. I really enjoy the coaching, the leadership side. But for us to drum up a really strong machine that was working day and night in the background without me being involved in it every day, I had to be able to bring someone in who had a brilliant track record in that space, was really knowledgeable, and was going to be constantly coming to me with new ideas about how we were going to go about doing those things. So I would still say I'm in the business. I try actually, and today's a perfect day for this conversation because I have a disappear day on Wednesday, which it's probably a better name for it, but I try certainly on Wednesday mornings to not focus in on anything that's day-to-day, you know, in terms of, and I think that's primarily sort of strategy focused. It could be around sort of designing content, but it's very much around, you know, what's going to be the value add part for the business. So at the start of 2021, I rolled out our 3-year strategy, and we sort of stick to that. You know, that's really sort of our guiding light. And I try and, you know, create that clarity in the business. You know, now it's recruitment, particularly on the permanent side, it can really, really vary. You know, you can have a phenomenal month or, you know, it could be quiet. But if we're focusing on the factors of what it's in our control and, you know, we've got good habits and objectives around that, I think that has a big impact.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
You seem to be someone that has a good understanding of their strengths and where they might best benefit the actual business. Has that been a learning experience for you over time, or have you always sort of been aware of what you're good at?
No. So I would describe myself as a recovering people pleaser. So that when I first set up the business, the first couple of years was successful, it was profitable, the business was making money. We were bringing in good people. Was I crystal clear in terms of what I was looking to achieve in the business? What were we sort of working to? I was probably a little bit too distracted, maybe about, you know, 1 minute looking at what one business was doing, maybe jumping down that route. The next minute, maybe what another business was doing. 2019 then hired, you know, 6 or 7 people at once. And then we at the time, which was positive, basically, we had a number of contractors, basically, and effectively, so you could have 10 employees, a recruiter, and then you could have 10 or 15 contractors. You effectively have 25 or 30 people to pay every month. And it wasn't, thankfully, it wasn't a sort of a cash flow scare to the point that I had to, you know, I was worried about the business, but it was enough of a jolt to say, right, I need to make decisions here about the direction that we're going in. What are we saying yes to? What are we saying no to? I wouldn't say it was overnight that I came into work the next day and, you know, immediately changed everything in terms of the structure. That was a turning point for me. And I think if I look at the last period of time, that sort of 2 years, I think we're going in a strong direction. I read that book, the Matthew Say book, Black Box Think, and I think that explains it really, really well. So within the aviation space, you know, they learn globally. If a plane goes down, it's they all learn from it. You know, they're not in a situation where someone can try and justify it. So I think it's stepping back from challenges, stuff that's happened in the past, and just being really honest with myself and with the people around me rather than immediately looking to justify certain behaviors.
So within that then, was there anyone that kind of helped you find that solution? Obviously the pain is kind of helping you find it, and the kind of failure, I suppose, in a way is helping you find it. But was there anyone that you lean on, or is there anyone you turn to when these things come up?
You obviously got to take on board and then make your own decisions and be influenced to a degree, but take that on board and then, you know, decide on what's best. So my mother is saying, which I think is really useful, it's not what happens, but it's how you deal with it. And I think that's been a healthy outlook. I know you're a sort of a book fan, an audio book fan yourself. If I was picking out one or two, this one's reasonably complex, but The Chimp Paradox by Steve Peters. you know, if you're a sports fan, the British, you know, Olympic team, pre-2012, pre-London, had very, very mixed performance. He went in, worked them individually. And a lot of it was to sort of simplify, really, you know, about managing what's in your control, managing your sort of emotions, understanding that what everyone wants to achieve is people have this sort of human side, and in an ideal world, they don't get distracted by what's going on around them. But I found that to be very good. I mentioned Matthew Saeed, I think the podcast I enjoy. And then I work with a business coach called Shane Craddock, and he has a group called The Inner Circle, which would be, I think there's probably 10 business owners, and we would meet up. Each of those businesses is very, very different, but I learn a lot from each, and I really value the company that you get from that, but also just being able to bounce ideas off.
How is that group structured, if you don't mind me asking? Is it everyone just gets on a Zoom call and it's a free-for-all for chatting about what everyone's problems are? Or is there a set kind of time allocation that everyone's given and things like that?
A lot of it would be the sort of the mental game, or, you know, that sort of inner game of tennis or a game of golf, whereby you're sort of managing your own, I guess, your mental health, your emotions, how you're sort of really, you've got a sort of a healthy outlook around these things. So a lot of it would be, maybe there might be a book. So there's a book that we recently read called Amongst Guide to Happiness, and people sort of chat about it. What I find it valuable is, look, there's no BS. You know, if someone's coming along every 3 months and it's the same story and this didn't happen, that didn't happen, you know, people are going to take you up. And I think when you're putting yourself out there in the accountability sense, I think that's important, you know, because ultimately you can become, if I was working as an employee with a company, you can be fairly sure someone's going to be challenging you, whereas sometimes in a business, you can drift a little bit. So I think having that sort of focused approach has been beneficial for me.
It does seem, from my conversations on this podcast and just kind of in day-to-day work, business owners in general seem to be quite interested in the personal development side of it, and even use the growing of the business and the development of the business as a personal development. Would you agree with that?
It's unlikely the business is going to be successful or grow if the leaders of the business aren't growing themselves, you know. And I think, you know, there's a saying which I would believe in, that your sort of input determines your output. Like, I, at the moment, obviously, we're what are we, early February. Look, the news at the moment, just as you know, it is fairly important to understand what's going on, and it has such an impact on the day-to-day aspects of business and so forth. But it would be a very low percentage of what I would consume every day. And I think that developing yourself is important. Now, I think there's a balance to get, though, you know, and I that sort of cheesy saying about self-help, you know, if you spend your whole life reading books and then jumping from one viewpoint to another. But I think taking on board different sort of views, different philosophies, embracing them, I think innovation is important. You know, it's trying out new things. But I think you have to be able to look back at a period of time and say, so what did we try? What did we work before you bring in a draft, you know, a whole host of new things? And I think from a team perspective, and that's where we talk about the quarterly planning piece, I think we have to say, look, this is what we're going to do this quarter. And if I come back every week or every 2 weeks and say, no, instead of that, we're going to do that, hopefully they'll keep me on track and the team do, and say, well, you know, hang on a sec, what happened to that other thing we were talking about? So the quarterly planning thing is actually to manage me as much as anything else. But I would be of the view that for a business to achieve the level of success which, you know, everyone would aspire to, I think it takes a high performing, you know, leadership team to achieve that.
Before you left your job in CPL, I'm sure you had, if you can remember, some ideas about what it might be like to work for yourself and to start your own business. When you started your own business and everything, was it what you first imagined?
I wasn't sure what to expect. I probably had the inner confidence to do it. And I think, look, that's a hard thing to sort of to quantify. The plan, if there was a plan B, which I didn't, you know, did I think that much about what would happen if it wasn't going to work? Probably didn't. I sort of backed myself in that sense. I remember early enough on, I got onto a good run, and two or three reasonable deals came off. And I think the confidence momentum that I'd got from that, you know, it really helped me. And I'd been through, I guess, like when you're managing teams in a company, you go through a lot of the challenges that you're going to go through from a business owner perspective. I suspected that piece that I mentioned in, you know, 2019, where we hired a lot of people, that was a very, very steep learning curve for me. And at that particular point, I never had any regrets, but I did think to myself, like, this is a significant amount of responsibility to take on, you know, because it's not good news if you can't pay your contractors, you know, and I obviously couldn't even countenance that happening. So did that occupy my mind more than anything had ever occupied my mind as an employee? I would say it did. But did I have the resolve and resource my mind to, yeah, I did. And I sort of practical in terms of, so you work out, okay, well, what's the first option? What's the second option? The third option? And just get your head down and just keep going through those until you reach an outcome. So I hope that answers your question. So I think there's spots where you're sort of in the deep end, you go, right, well, this is significantly more challenging a situation to be in than anything I've dealt with in the past. But I wouldn't say there was anything where I felt, God, I'm this is beyond maybe where my capability.
Do you think that having 10 or more years of experience before you started your own business, working within kind of large organizations, do you think that stood to you when you finally made the leap?
It's a great question. I often ask myself that as well, Connor, you know, of what would have happened at different points. I'm really, really not sure, you know, and there's other people from other successful recruitment companies start up earlier. I certainly think it's valuable, you know, to have a network. There's an advantage, I guess, to like, I think starting a business, say in the recruitment sector in your 20s, for example, the most obvious thing is a lot of your pals aren't decision makers, and that's challenging. Whereas I think once you get into your sort of 30s, 40s, you know, if you've been proactive, I think you're more of, you know, so I'm 43 now. There's, you know, a lot of my pals, you know, people I would have known from over the years are in positions of influence now. So that's certainly helpful. I've no regrets. You know, I look back at those period of time and I really enjoyed them, and I felt I made the most from them. But I think that if someone feels ready to go, I probably wouldn't hold back. I would just go ahead and do it. You know, I think that there's never a perfect time. I mean, you could throw in the 2009, 2010, which was exceptionally challenging in the recruitment sector. You know, like, geez, it was the world almost stopped moving. You know, COVID to a degree has been, you know, it probably has delayed people making decisions on it. Has it impacted our business or the sector in the same way as 2009? No, it's a totally different. It's a lot of hassle, and, you know, a lot of our clients weren't set up for remote. But going back to your question, I think if you're ready to go, I would go for it. I wouldn't wait 5 or 10 years, but I've no regrets personally myself on the timing of setting up Engage People.
I get the sense that you really enjoy running the business. You enjoy having your own business and with all the learnings and the ups and downs that even come with it. Am I right in saying that?
Very much so, yeah. Look, and I'm very, very lucky in that regard. So I walk into work for 15 to 20 minutes every day. I live in Randall. We're down at Main Street, obviously, you know, primarily working remote and stuff at the moment. We're in one of the iconic offices. There's no one else on our floor. So if I decide to go in, it's obviously handy enough to do that. I'm extremely lucky on that front. You know, I love my job, and we're building a team, which I think is very, very exciting. You know, I remember being at the Business and Finance Awards, the Ernest Young Entrepreneur of the Awards. And the first thing that all the entrepreneurs said was, well, I want to thank my team. And I was like, yeah, look, you know, they're just saying that. But the reality is, like, it would be absolutely impossible to achieve anything in business unless you have really, really good people. And sometimes the figurehead gets all the credit, but it's very much down to the people, the team you're able to create. And that, to me, is the most rewarding thing. As cheesy as it sounds, Connor, because I think when you're looking at other businesses, you go, no, that's the leader, that's the CEO, that's the person driving the business. Whereas, you know, when you're sort of on the inside of it, then you realize, look, it's totally a team effort. The team have to step up, and you have to have ambitious people there. But in a short answer, yeah, look, I'm very lucky on that front.
What do you think are the kind of keys to success within the recruitment business?
The client relationship side in particular, you have to invest that time to build up. Sometimes you have that sort of parent-child relationship where you're totally subservient to your client, and you're like, you're just delighted in the first place to be working with a company that you'd be very reluctant to get into any sort of a discussion, you know, with them, maybe challenge them a little bit. So if someone says, look, we're going to pay someone this, and you know that salary is going to make it exceptionally challenging to fill the position, but you're reluctant to push them too much because you might fear, okay, well, they may go elsewhere. So I think you have to be able to influence. There's a level of assertiveness, which I think is very, very important. There's a level of skill to be able to move conversations forward and build those relationships. I actually don't think that that's down to, you know, you could have 5 years, you could have 2 years experience, you could have 20 years experience. I actually think that's through development and coaching to be able to learn those skills. So I think building up those client relationships from an embryonic stage to build up that sort of, you know, what we call the sort of know, like, and trust. Okay, so know is obviously they have an idea, which makes life much easier. You know, if they have an idea or some interaction with you before, the like piece is that they've a sense of, and this is sometimes through maybe content you've shared, or, you know, they may have seen you on a, you know, having a conversation like this. the trust piece then is really, really valuable. I think if you're constantly working with companies that you haven't really built up that relationship with, it can be quite sort of soul destroying. So we really try to get to that point. So probably in our business, maybe 70-80% is permanent, 20-30% would be repeat revenue. And we're looking to get that to 50-50 by the end of 2022. And we're on a good path on that front. Of the permanent business, I would say 20-30% of it's retained, whereby we work with a company exclusively. They would pay up front for us, you know, and it's primarily on the finance director, CFO positions. So we fill 100% of those positions. Of the other positions then, which we call sort of contingency, where we're one of a few recruiters working on it, I think that's the area from a strategy perspective you have to be really, really smart about, you know, which companies you're going to work with, and you want to build those relationships up. Our ratio of filling those positions last year was 70%, which would be, you know, if I was to pat ourselves on the back, that would be very, very high within our sector. So we're decisive, I guess, on the positions that we take on. And then obviously, you know, it's what you sort of say no to as well. I think on the candidate side, you know, and this is probably obvious enough, but, you know, someone might apply to us for a position. They might say, well, who's that with? But like, you have to build up those relationships. First of all, you have to get understanding about what their situation is. Like, you know, you're probably aware the sort of remote working thing is really, really important, but it's not important to everyone. And a lot of people actually want to go into the office, you know, and they want to have that hybrid and the blend. But I think you have to be able to have those conversations beforehand. And a lot of it is just asking, you know, good questions, getting understanding about what their motivators are. And not everyone, you know, there's some people actually would take a 5K hit in salary for slightly better conditions, or, you know, so it's really sort of working through those pieces. So there's not one small little piece that I think is a sort of a, you know, a game changer, a showstopper, but I just think it's lots of little aspects too. I mean, it's probably the same with it within your own space, and that, like, if you look at, say, and I know the space you're in is more sort of, you know, working with companies and adding that value from a partnership perspective on the management account side, and, you know, probably offering good advice. If you look at the bigger accounting firms, I mean, the reality is, like, if you were to say to Quats Davidson, KPMG, PwC, Deloitte, it's to do with the people, really, you know. And I'm sure, like, you definitely see some initiatives that someone have that are really, really good, but I don't think you could put any of them in one area and say, look, that company is so spectacular at one particular piece. So it's getting the people aspect right, and then the sort of the coaching and development side, you know, to get to a skill set that's probably going to add the most value in your customer base.
As a recruiter, for these positions, you know, financial director and CFO, how much of that particular job do you need to know about or understand to recruit someone like that?
I think it's helpful to have an understanding, but I've recruited and have worked with accountants and solicitors who've become recruiters, and it's unfortunate it doesn't guarantee you success, so understanding the job spec inside out. Mm-hmm. There's general sort of skills and you know, that are associated with each role. You know, you generally be down to the two or three different things, right? So at that level, you know, you're assuming that someone's going to be a qualified accountant. The company could be about to go through sort of an IPO type scenario, or they could be looking to achieve significant fundraising or significant aspects of a sale. Understanding the lingo, understanding your way around maybe what companies have listed in the past, and, you know, a bit of a sense maybe about business in Ireland is certainly useful. So I think there's an advantage of having a level of experience in that particular area. So leadership is very often really, you know, a sort of a key piece to it. And you're generally able to drill down within two or three questions about how people have approached different things in the past. And the great thing, say, in the accounting world, we find the vast majority of senior accounting professionals, they're generally fairly pragmatic actually about what they're really good at and maybe what, you know, what they're not. And very often, you know, because they understand the value of a business and the value of people to a business, and therefore, you know, you're able to be reasonably clear about their own personal value proposition. And now, obviously, you know, they're unlikely to say to you that they're weak in a particular area, but it's really sort of getting to understand as to what, you know, really how passionate are they, or how much of a focus for them is the leadership and development side. You know, when it comes to the commercial interaction across the business, how interested are they in working with the sales team? How interested are they, you know, speaking to the head of IT about a major procurement project, you know? And I think, so you're working through a series of questions to understand maybe where their sort of sweet spot is. Another way of looking at it is that, like, you know, this is sort of a cheesy enough HR way of thinking about things, but if you were spending 70% plus of your time doing tasks that you generally sort of enjoy, that you derive fulfillment from, people are likely to be very happy in their jobs. And they say if that's less than 50% of the time, they probably won't be happy. And the chance that they leave or they won't make a good employer, colleague, whatever else. So you're looking to really focus in on what are the challenges that they really enjoy. And generally then, so if it's a CFO with a high growth company, you know, or small business, they're probably going to have to do a lot of different things. And if they're coming from a massive company and they're like, no, forget, like, I don't know, better off just to be clear about that. Whereas others really, really like the buzz, the challenge, getting something from an embryonic stage, really growing it. And it's the opposite with a big company, you know. So you could have someone who joined in a massive company. For them, it could be a nightmare. They may not have any interest. Whereas for others, they really like that complexity piece, you know, understanding the different dynamics of a business and everything that goes with that. So I hope that makes sense. So are you drilling down into like the really specifics around their ability? You're assuming they're going to be able to balance the books and maybe they've been on a pathway through them, but the CVs are actually will tell you a lot, you know, in terms of what they've done so far. And then you're into that piece around what floats their boat. And then you're looking at really that progressive experience that they've developed over the course of their career.
So tell me about the future. You know, you've kind of had a good run, you said, over the last 2 years. What's the plan now for, I suppose, the next 3 years?
Yeah, so good question. I think I mentioned there, so the next divisions for us then would be, I mentioned the legal side, the business support space, and this actually fits in on the bank and the accountancy side. There's a huge growth area in that sort of business intelligence, data analytics space, and a lot of the accounting job specs we're starting to see, you know, of certainly a nice to have is someone who understands some of the business intelligence software. So they would be some of the divisions. We have financial goals to achieve. So when I first set out, I thought it was very simple. You get to €1 million turnover, then €1 million profit, then 10 million euro turnover, and then 10 million euro profit. So we've achieved stage one of that, which is exciting. And then the next stage to achieve stage two. And I think, look, I'm ambitious in terms of what I want to achieve from my own potential, from a business perspective. So that's a good way of sort of keeping on track. I think we're building what I believe to be a very strong business development system. And I think that that's a combination of, so recruitment traditionally would have been a cold call type business, where I think there's a great alignment between marketing and sales, whereby you can build up a really strong network of people you start to interact with. They may not be recruiting straight away, but you build up those relationships. And then there's touch points, basically, which involve phone calls at different points. That's been a very exciting development for us. I guess the other thing that COVID has brought around is that it really has opened up the market significantly. So a natural thing for Irish recruitment companies is to look at the UK, first of all, because it's very, very close. But the reality is the States is a huge marketplace. And what you tend to have over there is either massive recruitment companies or literally one or two person bands, which are, you know, very often sort of, I don't know, sort of categorize them all as lifestyle businesses, but I think there's big opportunities for niche recruitment companies to work in specific markets in the States, potentially on the East Coast initially, and potentially within that risk and compliance business analytics space. And the goal of that would be to create opportunities from a business perspective. And I think that, you know, you set up a business basically whereby you're able to open up a market through that combination of marketing and sales and then build it from there.
You would move to the States potentially in the not too distant future?
So that as part of the 3-year goal, yeah, that 30% of our revenue would be from the US.
You might not have to move there given the way the world is now, but would you like to move to the States and to run the business from there for a few years?
A very good question now, and my wife will be listening to this now, and I'm sure she's certainly very, very partial to trips to New York now. Yeah. My sense is that'll be the first item on the agenda. I think if you're setting business goals, it's sometimes you can get tied up with all the specific details about how to do certain things. Whereas I think knowing exactly what you're going to do for the next quarter and really the next year, I think is very, very important. I think to build up a business over there, absolutely, it involves, you know, going back and forward, spending some time over there. Have I thought about the specific details of every aspect of that? No. But if I look at some of the UK recruitment, and the UK recruitment market is huge, and I've a good network of people over there, you know, and I'm on a couple of groups basically, and these guys are doing it, you know, day in, day out. And I have to say, it's very, very impressive. So you could look at Europe, where there's more complexity maybe to setting up, whether you look at the States, which is a huge marketplace. You know, you'd be looking obviously at a hybrid situation. I think, you know, Ireland and Dublin would be our HQ, and then to grow the business internationally from there.
Have you just recently gotten the confidence to think about an international expansion, or has that always kind of been on your mind since day one?
I think once I started planning 3 years in advance. So at the start of 2020, which a lot of people, you know, were doing, you sort of create 3-year plans. And then I thought, like, how passionate am I about going back and forth to London? So when I was in CPL, we were doing some recruitment in London and going back and forward. It's a really competitive market over there. You know, there's tens of thousands of recruitment companies. So while it's a big market over there, I thought to myself, you know, is that going to be the next stage? And I think you have to be ambitious from a business perspective. Now, the Irish market is fantastic. It's a great recruitment market to work in. You know, it's just getting stronger and stronger in terms of what's sort of taking place in Ireland. And I know COVID's been a total headache, but I would be optimistic as to how things will maneuver beyond that. But if I was to just say in 3 years' time, you know, we're going to be a bigger version of our business in Dublin, I think that would be limited, you know. So therefore, I think that you start to plan then, you know, as time goes on, international offices. And if that's the case, that it doesn't become 30% of the business, then so be it. But it could become significantly more than that. And therefore, I think for us to achieve our potential and the management team's potential, because it's brought up in conversation quite a bit, building out the team internationally. We had set a goal of traveling to Lisbon at the end of September this year. We'll have to wait and see if that's sort of feasible or not. Lisbon would be a very popular location as well. But if we're working at Dublin and EU, a Lisbon office would be lovely from a lifestyle perspective. But I think if you have an office on the East Coast of the US, and you're very specific about the niche that you're in, I think there are big opportunities over there.
So, Paul, if people want to get in touch, where should they reach out?
So I know you and I are very active on LinkedIn. I think that's probably the easiest way. It's my email address is probably easier than spelling my last name. So it's paul@engagepeople.ie, and then it's Paul McClatchy, McClatchy on LinkedIn. And I'd be delighted to chat to your audience.
Great. Paul McClatchy, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks, Connor. Cheers.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.